And welcome to the special episode of Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg and David Hawley. This episode centers around Shad Khan and the managers, head coaches he has put in charge of Fulham. This should be an interesting show. We'll also be talking about the players that have recently departed the club as well. So we have much to get through. But before we do anything, I'm going to bring on one of my co-hosts on the line with me, Mr. Mike Gregg. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Doing well. Surviving the downpours that we are having in London over the last 24 hours. But looking forward to doing the show and talking about the players who have left and the managers we've had over the last 3 years.
Yes, and let's start here because David will be joining us shortly. But Mike, you came to me with this idea, and I actually think it's a fascinating one. And we're going to look at all the managers. You know, we're not going to look at, you know, some of the managers that just filled in, you know, like Peter Grant and Stuart Gray. We're going to focus on the other managers that really took over during Shad Khan's time, and we're going to break it down. We're just going to talk about it. I think it's a good topic, and glad that you brought that to my attention, Mike, and that's what we're going to do today.
Yeah, the idea being that I see a lot of people recently, and well, you know, since Khan took over, saying he's too quick to fire, he's too slow to fire, he's a, you know, why did he give him the job? And, you know, that was a mistake. And it's all in hindsight. And, you know, I think if we, you know, the idea really is to look back from Yol onwards and to see, you know, why the person was sacked possibly. And, you know, why the person was appointed and the sort of, you know, thought process behind it. And I think once we go through it, we'll see, you know, a lot of it is, you know, he's made the decision and, you know, it hasn't worked out, but, you know, we'll discuss it with Dave. The idea being me and Dave will probably, you know, say, yes, we think it was a good decision or a bad decision. If it's a draw, you get the casting vote, Russ.
I love that. I get the casting. I love that. Okay, so that's good. Well, listen, David is on the line. I'm going to bring him on right now. Mr. Hawley, how you doing?
Good evening, Russ. Good evening, Mike. Yeah, I just about managed to prize my way from my lovely bath because I'm pretty tired after playing football. It's quite hot this evening to play football. And last night I didn't get home till 2 a.m. I went down to London. I queued all day with 25,000 people for a job that Mike told me about, actually. But in the end, I didn't get it. It was a real prestige driving job, driving Jazz Richards all the way from London to Glasgow. But fortunately, I didn't get it. So I spent the whole day in London for nothing. No, seriously, I went down for a quiz competition. The trains were messed up. And didn't get home till 2 a.m. So pretty tired, but I've perked up now. I'm really raring to go, and I'm looking forward to all this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too, David. And I want to thank Mike for coming up with this idea. But in the meantime, while we were planning the show, we actually had some news. And Mike, I'm going to start with you. We're going to talk about the other departures in a little bit, but let's start with the one that happened today. I was a little bit, you know, taken aback by this, not in a negative or positive way. I just was surprised by this. It was on the Fulham website earlier that Andy Larnigan has moved on the Wolves. What are your thoughts when you saw the news?
Yeah, well, I did actually hear something very early this morning that something might be happening with him. So I wasn't that surprised when I saw it. But I think it adds up. I mean, you know, we've got Steckenberg coming back into the squad. He'll probably move on. But we've got Bettinelli under a long contract. We saw him and Lonergan last year, and they're pretty much the same goalkeeper, aren't they, really? They both have the same flaws. And, you know, we saw in January we were after a goalkeeper, and I honestly expect us to go looking for a number one to start the season. So we had to make space, and we've got a lot of youngsters coming through. So I'm surprised probably at how quick he's gone. I expected, you know, maybe into July, but I think it's the right move for everyone, and I don't think he let us down when he was here. I thought, you know, when he was playing, he saved an awful lot of goals. He did let in those long shots, which I'm sure Dave will comment about, but, you know, he's a solid championship goalkeeper, and
sure,
I think any goalkeeper behind our defence would have struggled, but, you know, good luck to him, and, you know, I wish him all the best.
Absolutely, I do. I wish Andy Lonergan the best. You know, he did have some key stops, I guess you could say, but our defense was poor. But he did have some deficiencies, and we pointed that out throughout the year. But I do wish him the best. David, thoughts about Andrew Lonergan moving on to Wolves?
Well, it's a clear statement of intent for me from Slavica, and it kind of makes me feel that Slavica agrees with my analysis that he's not really good enough, and we need better. We need an upgrade, and it's good in that respect because you know this could be the first of May. Then we may see all of our less favourite players moving on quickly. I mean, it's yeah, I feel sorry in a way for Lonergan because he certainly shouldn't be made a scapegoat for what happened last season.
Right.
You know, he's a good, honest pro. He gave us our best and his best. And you know, I think in terms of the you know one-on-ones, he was a great keeper. I don't think you get much better one-on-one with stopping. But what him let him down was obviously the long shots. And we can talk about that. But the real letdown was a lack of command in the box with a defence like ours. You know, I've said it so many times. You know, we miss Mark Shorts. We miss a keeper like that. He'll come and claim the ball, take that pressure away from our defence. I think we could have really, you know, conceded a lot less goals with a commanding goalkeeper. And I assume what happened today is Slavica's, he thinks the same. And that, you know, we have too much of a muchness in the goalkeeping front and something has to go. It's a shame for Lonergan. I think he's, as a number two, he's a great guy to have. But it's one of those situations where he's a great guy to have on the bench, but you don't want to have to use him and rely on him all the time. He'd come into the odd game and fill in and do a good job for you, but you need a little bit better. I think if you want to be challenging for promotion, you need a little bit better than that. But good luck to him anyway, and wish him the best.
So it sounds like, David, that you actually agree with Mike. You think this is a sign of intent that Slavica is going to go after our number one goalkeeper?
Well, we saw it in the January window, the talk of McCarthy or whatever coming in. Didn't happen in the end, but I think Slavica realises that, you know, we've got to refurb the team all the way through, and it starts with the goalkeeper. I would expect to see other people go as well. On this basis, if this is the benchmark, if Lonergan is the benchmark for being not good enough and we need to upgrade, then there's a lot of people who are going to be going. I mean, in the same vein, you'd expect to see the end of, you know, people like Kavanagh, Richards, of course, and others. You know, we've already seen Dan Byrne and Sean Hutchinson go, of course. You know, there may be more yet. We're very interested to see what happens with Spearman and Ream, and it's also people like Bodaroff. So, yeah, this is definitely a statement of intent as far as I can see it.
Okay, very good. And, Mike, you've already said this, so you truly believe that this departure and, like what David said, the fact that we were interested in a goalkeeper in January is a sign that Slavica, nothing against Marcus Bettinelli, but he might be looking to upgrade the position.
Yeah, I think that's it might not be a priority like, you know, centre backs and replacing strikers or anything else, but I fully expect us to go for another goalkeeper. And like I say, I think he will be seen as the number one goalkeeper, and where that puts Bettinelli, who knows? But you know, we've got some other good goalkeepers coming through, but Bettinelli has to improve in his commanding of his 6-yard box, let alone the rest of the box. So,
I agree.
You know, another experienced goalkeeper is going to come in, and I think we need someone who's different to everyone else at Fulham. All our Fulham goalkeepers are, you know, solid shot stoppers, stay on their line. We need somebody who's going to be slightly more different and a bit more of an organiser. So, come the first game of season, I don't think it'd be Bettinelli in goal.
Okay, very interesting. That's something to really look out for. All right, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you, but before I do, I'm just going to read the announcement from yesterday, the player departures. The club is able to confirm the following player activity following the expiry of the Fulham contracts on June the 30th, 2016. You've already mentioned Dan Byrne and also Sean Hutchinson, but I'm also going to mention Alex Kaczynikowicz. Jamie O'Hara is mentioned here as well, but Jamie O'Hara actually has tweeted, I don't know if he tweeted anything out today, that he is in negotiations to potentially maybe come back to the club. We'll see what happens there. Other players mentioned in this announcement were Stephen Arthur-Worry, Liam Donnelly, Shane Elworthy, Jordan Evans, a little sore spot, we'll talk about that a little bit, Dino Halloran, Ian Pino-Solar, Andre Pumain, and Aaron Redford. All right, Mike, I know the player that you're really upset about because of your reaction when the announcement came out. So share with me your thoughts of these player departures.
I mean, it was it wasn't a shock with Dan, obviously, because he'd already tweeted it out. Kakanich had basically made it known he wasn't going to hang around. Hutchinson, we had an option on, but, somebody who's only played half a dozen games, really, eight games last season, was never going to get that option. And O'Hara, whether he is actually in discussions, who knows? I mean, it's not unheard of players technically being released and then re-signing, Karagounis being the last one who did that. I would not be unhappy to see O'Hara sign for another year, but, I suppose it's a question of whether we can get a replacement. But the youngsters, I can run through them. Arthur Worry, he's got he's had two bad injuries and he's had loan spells away and he just hasn't progressed. So I'm not surprised he was released. Donnelly's a bit disappointing. Part of the 2014 Youth Cup team and who impressed everyone with his television interviews and experience from that. But again, is he a centre-back? Is he a right-back? No one really knows at the club and he hasn't pushed on. El Worthy and O'Halloran were never going to make it for me in the first team. So, they're gone. Pinasolo, I liked. He was a centre-back from Spain, but made too many mistakes. Paul Maine's gone to France for the last year. Very fast. But I think his attitude, there's real questions there. And Redford, young striker, but, hasn't scored enough goals. Doesn't have the quality. So, not surprised by all of them. But for me, as you know, it's Jordan Evans, who, I do rate. Does have a very good left foot. Had a decent loan spell at Oxford. Ended up, playing at Wembley. And I was hoping they'd give him another year, but they haven't. But I wish him all the best. And, I am disappointed with that one. To let all these youngsters go, I felt he deserved at least another year's contract. But as it's been pointed out, we've got some really good youngsters coming through. Udane and Session on as well. So who knows? Maybe they're going to be advanced straight up to the 21s. But it does leave us, short at left back. Kavanagh, unfortunately, doesn't look like he's going to make it, really, with us. So he'll probably move on. And then so we're definitely going to be in the looking for left backs in, for the first team. But overall, not surprised by that list, considering all the, they're all out of contract. There's a couple of other players who are out of contract. And it's not been officially said whether they're staying or not, so we suspect they're negotiating. But yeah, it was for me, it was just Evans out of all of them. If you give me one player to keep, I would have kept him.
Okay. I want to go right back to you. You brought up something that made me think. You were talking about the youngsters coming up, Mike. Ryan Sessegnon is a hot property. And you already mentioned you think he's going to be moved up. Could that be the reason why Jordan Evans is gone?
Well, I think it is about having a balance to the squad. And, you've got Udane as a left back, come left midfielder. You've got Sessegnon as well, who's, been the 18th man with the first team for one home game, training on the pitch. So they've obviously, and he is highly rated and is being watched by all the big teams. So, is he good enough to be promoted to at least the 21s? I don't know. We'll find that out. But maybe, there just wasn't room for Evans. And he is 20. So he should be knocking on the door, really, to at least be there or thereabouts. And the disappointing thing for me is he spent the last 6 months on loan. So he wasn't there at the club. So, Jokanović hasn't had a chance to see him on a day-to-day basis. So, I'm sure they've had reports and watched him at Oxford. But, yeah, it was just disappointing for that. Can I just mention Kakanić?
Sure, absolutely, Mike.
Yeah. There is a player who I think has got skill. And he has got something about him. And, again, I wish him all the best. But I just hope wherever he goes, they they see him as a left winger, nothing more than a left winger, and he just does that and doesn't get stuck on the right, in the centre, or anywhere else. He's a left winger, heads down, get towards the box. And I think best for him to probably maybe go back home or another country in Europe and rebuild his career, because he's, you know, he's definitely got something about him.
Okay, very good. Very interesting about Kaká. I do wish him the best, too, and I'm glad that you really nailed where he would best fit with another club. So hopefully things work out for Kaká. David, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on everything that Mike shared, and I'm going to ask you the question that that Mike was talking about a little bit with Jamie O'Hara. If you're Fulham, would you renegotiate with him and try to get him to come back with the club if the price was right?
Well, this is the only kind of thing that you wonder about, because what is there to negotiate? They don't want to continue on the current contract, so how would the new contract be different? It can only be less money, I would imagine, because if they do want to keep him, they'd obviously have renewed or extended his existing contract, his existing deal. So the fact is they're not taking that up, but there is this potential that there's a renegotiation. So, you know, what is there to negotiate, really? Either you want him or you don't. If you do want him, then I guess you've got to be prepared to pay the money. You wouldn't think he was on a massive deal, someone who's come in. Then again, obviously, as a freebie, perhaps they can be more generous. So it can only be the fact that he wants to stay, and it's how low, you know, will he go that the club will take him up on that, I think, because obviously the club can't be that keen on keeping him. It's a problem with Jamie, of course, and, you know, I've been a fan of his, really, but he does come with a lot of baggage, and, you know, his private life does spill over, I think, sometimes into the football world, and whether that is, you know, a good positive influence, I don't really know. Personally, I think I would find it difficult, if it was me in that situation, to you know, be a public figure, you know, a sporting player, a sports star even, with, you know, a lot of baggage. But let's see what happens with that one. But there weren't any surprises on the list. I'm not really going to comment too much on the youngsters, because that's much more Mike's territory than mine. Mike gets to see them on a regular basis. I don't, unfortunately. Obviously, I was, you know, very much aware of Mike's, you know, feelings about Jordan Evans, and that, you know, I thought the logical move would be to keep him, because, one, he can't be any worse than Kavanagh, and two, and I don't mean that in a horrible way, because
Kavanagh, I know what you mean.
I don't think he could be any worse than that. But the fact is that Evans has played left midfield or left back, and so he is potentially a good candidate for left back or wing back, should we play that system. So I don't think it would have cost as much money to keep him. And I think what Mike said is probably very true, that although people will have been watching him, he hasn't been there under the eye of Slavisa. So I think he's
good
probably
point.
Missed out a little bit there. And I do feel sorry for him on that respect. The other guys, as I say, I don't really know. At one stage, I think Liam Donnelly was showing a lot of promise, and we thought he might get through, but that hasn't materialised. And in terms of, you know, the main players being released, of course, you know, as I say, we've already talked about Dan Burn and Sean Hutchison. Kaká, he's been an enigma of literally the whole time he's been at Fulham. And he started young, you know, he looked quick, with promise, and we expected him really to improve upon that and to, you know, have a stable position in the side, perhaps. But he never had a run in the side, you know. He popped up in a few strange positions, especially towards the end. And, you know, even Slavisa, he gave him a go. He gave him a solid run of games when he was first here. But, you know, playing on the right didn't do him any favours, I think. And it's a shame for him. But I think, obviously, it's probably time for him to find a new challenge, because it hasn't helped. Being at Fulham hasn't helped realise his potential, and as I say, he's been on the periphery the whole time. We need, you know, we've got lots of players who've been on the periphery. We need, you know, people who are going to be regulars in the team, people who can contribute on a regular basis. I don't think we want a massive squad and lots of rotation. We need stability, so we need to be, I think, maybe partly by necessity, a smaller squad for financial reasons, but also
right.
A smaller squad to be a more close-knit squad and to be, as I say, to have a more of a regular, solid starting team rather than lots of rotation where we never gain the stability. Of course, you need, you know, cover in all positions. Of course you do. But, you know, Mike will tell you from his list that we've had enough players to field three first teams in the last season. And I think for, you know, a club in our situation, that's just a little bit you know, a bit too much. You need to be able to field, you know, field two first teams, I guess, if you really have to. And you have to be a bit cute with the players, but we just had too many players. So I think this is, you know, these are the easy ones. These guys are out of contract, so they're off. But I think there will be more as well.
Okay, very good. And, guys, before we move on from this topic, Mike, I'm going to go back to you. I actually did another show, and this show will be posted soon, and this was one of the topics I gave the guys. I'm going to give it to you as well, because we are talking about the departures, but there are two names. There are more names as well, but these two obviously stick out. What do you make of the fact that Moussa Dembele and Emerson Hyman are not on this list? I think it's just that this is about business, not the team, and potentially these players are still talking. Let's hope that they're still talking. But what do you make of the fact that these two names, these two players, are not on this list?
Okay, so people are getting
you,
a bit confused.
I'm sorry,
I'm going to Mike.
It was you, Mike.
Yeah. People are getting a bit confused about this. Taper exercise, okay? The Football League asks the clubs, a player's contract ends at the end of June, and they want to have the list of the players that the club are technically releasing. So if you decide not to offer a player a contract, or a contract with less money than his current contract, they can just walk away. And so this list are the players we have said are walking away. You know, we're letting them go. There's other players like Josh Smile. His contract is up this summer,
right,
but he's not on this list. Okay, and also you've got to think about the players who are under 24. So, or 23 and under, I mean. So Dembele and Hyman, we have offered them contracts. So technically, we still have their registrations. They're under 24. We've offered the contracts. Now, on the 1st of July, they can walk away. And even now, they can sign a pre-agreement. But that's why they're not on that list, is because we have not released them. We want to keep them. And until the 1st of July, they are technically still Fulham players, and we will continue talking to them. You know, whether they've made their decision or not, who knows? But I think it's telling that neither of them have signed a pre-contract with anyone, which
that's
I find.
Great point there, Mike. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I find it very surprising. I mean, they could be weighing up their options, but really, you know, with pre-season training for most clubs starting, you know, over the next few weeks, even. You know, I would have thought they'd want their team where they're going to go sorted as soon as possible. They don't want to go into a season, you know, late because they, you know, they keep other teams hanging around. So that's why certain players are not on this list. These are purely the ones we've said thanks, but no thanks, you know, move on. But that doesn't stop us still negotiating them. I think, David, when he said about Jamie O'Hara, what's the problem? I suspect they've gone, you know, if they are talking, they're going to say, well, you're not going to play as many games, so you can take this lower offer if you want. And I think that's what, if there is any negotiation going on, that's what that one is.
Okay. Hey, David, could you take over for a second and answer this part? I'm going to drop off for just a second, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's wrong. Yeah, no, it's fine, Mike. I think you more or less covered what I was going to say anyway, because I noticed yesterday we had a few people asking us, didn't we, on Twitter about why certain players weren't on the list. But it's right, isn't it? In the situation where it's only in the situation where you're not prepared to offer someone another contract or where you would only offer them a lesser contract. Otherwise, they are technically, well, at least our players until the 1st of July, I guess, aren't they, Mike?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the rules are, if I'm a professional footballer at a club and you offer me a worse contract than I've just had, then I can leave. I can walk away. If you offer me a contract of the same money, the same duration, or more money and a longer duration, then the club keeps that registration. That's for players who are under 24. So you would be entitled to have a fee. You know, if they decide, no, I don't want to sign this contract, I'll move to, you know, the team down the road or whatever. But that's where the confusion is. And, you know, no club, not even Fulham or, you know, some of the other teams, their communication is better. None of them explain this. It's just a list that they have to produce by the 9th of June. And we weren't the last ones. We weren't the last ones. So for a change.
Whichever Wednesday that was.
It was.
There were Wednesday pieces to it, I think. But no, that's fine. I mean, I think the one that's interesting, Mike, for me is someone that you brought up before, Josh Smile. So obviously we're in a situation where he's out of contract, but we would like to try and keep him, I assume, by the fact that he hasn't been named on the release list.
Well, yeah, his contract is up this summer. And, you know, if we were going to release him, he would have been on that list. So that makes me think they've offered him another contract. And, you know, it will be obviously more than what he's had before. But there's been nothing to say he's actually signed it. But, yeah, that's why he's not on that list, because technically it looks as if we want to keep him. And I'm not surprised. I don't think he's ever going to make the first team. But as a reserve, deep-sitting midfielder, holding midfielder for somebody who's about 5'6", you know, he's all we have, really. So, and I don't know if you saw my tweet today about the 2014 youth team. You know, from the 16 players in the second leg against the team down the road, you know, it looks like we're only going to have 7 of them left.
Wow.
You know, going into next season. And,
yeah,
you know, in the space of just over 2 years to lose over half that squad, I think is, you know, I don't know, that might be above average, below average. But remembering that team, I think that's an awful lot at this moment in time.
No,
very
good. The one that surprised
me,
Mike, before we go back to Russ, was the one that surprised me most from that era was Solomon Sambu. I really thought we would keep him.
I remember.
I was shocked to see him go at the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a prime example of a youngster who thought he was better than he was. My agent's going to get me a better contract. And he's playing at Bedford Town, which is, what, level 7, level 8, whatever it is. So for youngsters, they tend to take the contracts on offer. So, well, they should really, you know, because look at how many players have been released. You've only got to go on the BBC website page to see how many professional footballers are without a job on the 1st of July. I mean, the turnover rate is massive.
Okay, David, thank you so much for helping me out while I jumped off for just a second. Very interesting conversation. We'll just end it here because I want to get into talking about the managers / head coaches under Shad Khan. And, Mike, just gut feeling, do you think we might see one or potentially two? You mentioned Josh Smile. We're talking about Emerson Hyman. Or Moussa Dembele, just gut feeling. Do you think any of them could be back?
I think you've got to take Dembele and Hyman out of any conversation with regards to, you know, those two are unique in that they're first team players, highly sought after. I'll be shocked if either of them start with Fulham. I really will be. But, you know, you can only keep your fingers crossed and hope they do. With the other guys who haven't been mentioned, like Shackelford and Smile and that, they must have been offered contracts, and they're either going to sign them, and there'll be an announcement at the beginning of July, or they'll end up moving on. But you know, that's what we have to see. But I really don't see the two big lads staying with us. I hope they do, but I can't see it.
Okay, David, do you agree with Mike on that? David, do we lose David? You still with me, Mike?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Don't worry, David.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm
David,
here.
You there? Okay.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, David.
Yep. Yeah, where did he go? I was here the whole time. No, I was just saying, I bow to Mike's experience on these ones and these issues with the under-21s. Unfortunately, where I am, I don't get to see them play. So I'm fully happy to take Mike's perspective on these things.
Okay. Okay, I was actually asking specifically about Hyman and Dembele. Do you agree with Mike that both of them probably won't be back?
Well, I can't see a scenario where they would stay, really, because they can walk, or we could get money for them, but I don't think, you know, they're going to sign. The other option is them to sign. I don't think they would sign, because in both cases, I believe someone would pick them up. It's not like we talk about Solomon Sambu that Mike said, that he's now playing level 7 or level 8 in the pyramid. Both these guys, you know, would potentially go to Championship clubs, even Premier League clubs, technically, at least, you know, to work their way up again, or someone on the continent. So I can't see a scenario where they would stay, really, unless something dramatic happens.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, now let's talk about the managers slash head coaches under Shad Khan. We have to start with Martin Jol, because Martin Jol actually started with Fulham on June 7, 2011, and finished up December 1st, 2013. Just some facts, some stats for you. Overall with Fulham, 113 matches, 38 victories, 28 draws, 47 losses. His winning percentage, this is just overall, 33.63%. However, in his last season, Fulham 2013, that season, 3 wins, 1 draw, 9 losses, 23%, the winning percentage was at 23%, and we were 19th at the league at the time when we made the move. So, Mike, let's go back to this time when Khan took over from Al-Fayed and the situation with Martin Jol, and just give me your overall thoughts on I guess you could say, when we got to the point when he was sacked.
Okay, I think we have to step back a bit and look at the end of the 2012-2013 season. I mean, we finished 12th, which sounds promising, 43 points. But when you look at the way the season went from Christmas onwards, you know, there was a run of 7 games towards the end where we didn't win a game, and it was only beating Swansea away on the last day 3-0. But if we hadn't won that game, if we'd lost it, we would have actually finished 16th and just, you know, 4 points off the relegation spot. So it's very flattering where we finished, I think, considering the season we had. And I think if we'd lost and if Mohamed Al-Fayed had stayed in charge, I don't think Jol would have survived the summer. And, you know, there's plenty of people who say that the Swansea game saved him. But I also think the fact that we were in the process of selling the clubs saved him. Because do you want to sell a club without a manager? So he started that next season really by default because he was the man in position. And unfortunately, his body language and the way he was speaking, you know, pre-season and early on, just showed a man who was disinterested. And I wrote an article last year about his signings that summer. And so there's a big thing about Khan coming in and everyone saying that he was told that the club's in good health, you should just let us get on with our plans for the summer. And that's what they did. But you look at players like, we signed Rita, Boateng, Ambretta, Steckenberg, Tabat, Bent, Parker, Zevatek. You know, over 10 million quid in fees there. Average age of 28. All the problems we had the season before, having too old a team, no pace, this kind of thing. None of it was sorted. It was lazy purchases during that summer. Of course, culminating in, really, for me, the biggest waste of money over the last few years, which was Parker, you know, 3.5 million quid, 3.5 year, you know, 4 year contract, whatever, £50,000-£60,000 a week. So, you know, we started that next season. And, you know, let's talk about bringing a coach in. Mühlenstein finally came in to help him out. And then,
right.
You know, we had that run of 5 games, and it was just getting worse and worse. And when it came down to it, you know, the West Ham game, lost 3-0. He just had to go because he just looked totally lost. And really, in retrospect, should have gone in the summer. But you can understand the whole idea of this show for me is let's look at Khan and his position that he was in at the time. Did they make the right decision? I think
Right. Buying
a club, Premier League club, that's finished 12th, you don't have much knowledge of really about what's going on, then, yeah, you stick with the manager in position. Martin Jol has a big profile, and, you know, he had these plans. He obviously had these plans to sign these players, and we did some of that work quite early in the summer as well. So he was back, but in retrospect, he should have been given more money to buy younger players, but, you know, maybe he shouldn't have even had the job, but I think Khan was right to let him carry on. But was it a did he leave it too long to sack him? You know, should it have been after the Liverpool game or even the United game? But, you know, in the end, he made the decision. I think it was the right one.
Okay, and I agree that it was the right decision, and that's the question here, Mike. You know, I'm glad that you really laid it out nicely talking about the season before. I'm glad that you went there because you really talked about not only what happened at the end of the year and then, of course, the end of last season, the season prior, and then talked about the signings. And all these signings, they were all in the works when Conte took over. So you're asking yourself, yes, I agree with you that Martignol should have gone, but you have a change of ownership. And with an owner that really does not know a lot about Premier League football and does not really know a lot about Fulham, so he's coming into the situation and assessing, and that's kind of what went on. So, David, I'm going to go to you because I remember our talks about this. Have you changed your stance at all about the ending of Martignol with Shaw Connor? Do you feel similar to what you did a few years ago?
I think that, you know, what he's talked about is the key factor. The change of ownership, I think, is the key factor here. Had we had the same owner, I think it would have been a lot easier decision to say, on your bike, you're not good enough. But, as I say, a man who's, let's say, naive and perhaps poorly advised in the terms of football has come in and bought the club, believing us to be, you know, when you sell a property, a real estate or whatever, you don't say, oh, well, actually, it's got a crack here and a crack there and a bit this is right. You sell it in the best possible light, don't you? So, of course, you know, it may have been sold to him, not quite truly, but, you know, on the face of it, here we are, he's an established Premier League club, prime real estate location as well for the ground, you know, full capacity every week, you know, track record in there, etc., established Premier League players. So, you know, perhaps Khan took the club too much at face value, thought that, you know, the easiest thing and the best thing to do is to maintain the status quo, not rock the boat at all. And that's why I think Yol was retained, because, as Mike said, I think especially that last win of the season away at Swansea, when Swansea really, you know, weren't that interested, I think, really
yep.
that masked what was a poor season or a poor end to the season.
Totally agree.
So, yeah, so for me, I can understand why Yol was retained, but I maintain still, obviously, and it's easy to say with hindsight, you know, it's not just about me being right all the time. Everyone can be right with hindsight, you know. it's an easiest thing. It's just predicting the future is the hardest thing, of course. But
sure.
With hindsight, I still think it was the wrong decision. That I can, as I said, I can see why it happened like it did. But I think it bought Yol too much time, the win at the season at the end and the chain of ownership. And that was fatal potentially for us.
Okay, so we're going back to you believe that Yol should have been sacked by Khan, even though Khan just came in, he should have done it anyways. That's where you're coming on this? You believe that he should have known better and he should have known more about his investment and should not have retained Yol when he took over?
Well, you know, I'm not quite saying that because it's... but in an ideal world, yes, Khan would have come in and said, this hasn't been good enough. And then and let me just sort of... I'll give you a comparison then.
Okay,
Mohamed
give me a comparison.
When he took over... Yeah, when Mohamed Al-Fayed took over, Mickey Adams had been a successful manager for us with no money at all, literally. You know, he bought a play, you know, free transfers, journeymen, people for next to nothing. I mean, he built a team, and it was, you know, one of these jigsaws that actually fitted together well. We had a left footer at right back. I'm sure Mike will remember Paul Watson. So we had a left footer who used to play right back and a strange sort of eclectic mix of players. But we got promoted by, you know, by having the right blend. And Mickey Adams, I don't think we started the season as a rocket, but we started okay. There was nothing of major concern when we started the season. But Fayed, you know, decided that's not good enough. I'm going to go out there. I want Kevin Keegan and Ray Wilkins. Well, you know, again, in hindsight, Ray Wilkins wasn't such a great move. But in the end, when Wilkins went and we were left with Keegan, things worked out because whatever Keegan does, he has this kind of infectious sort of enthusiasm that, you know, the team wasn't perhaps technically the most gifted, but through money and through everything else, you know, we had a good team under Keegan. So Fayed
okay.
was quite happy when he came in to make a drastic decision because he perhaps he knew he had the right advisors, who knows what the difference was, but he was happy to do that. So there's nothing to say that you know, that Khan shouldn't have done that. I think if Khan had been better advised when he came in, he would have realised that we were going nowhere under Yole. Some of the signings and the players were just not good enough. We had an ageing squad, but he wasn't made aware of these things. He was sold on the idea that we were an established Premier League team. We were doing okay. There was no immediate concern. And I think that it was, you know, a combination of his naivety and poor advice. Otherwise, I think he would have sacked him.
Okay, very good. Okay, so I'm going to do this twofold because we're going to talk about the decision. Twofold, David. We're going to talk about in December, was it the right decision? But we're also going to talk about when Khan took over. So we're going to do it in two parts. Was it the right decision to retain Yole? It sounds like you think it was a mistake, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, but let's go to December. Right decision then to sack him? I'm assuming you say yes. I shouldn't have said.
Well, it was too late in my view, but yes, obviously at that point.
Okay, very good. Mike, twofold to you. Summer, was it the right decision to retain him? And then, of course, in December, was it the right decision to sack him? And I'll be the deciding vote.
Well, if I'm going to put myself, I mean, we all agree that he should have gone in the summer. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if you're calm,
yes.
Just coming in, and I'm going to talk about Mullenstein in a minute. I would
sure.
say it was the right decision to keep him on from Khan's point of view. That's what I'm going to say. But absolutely, it was the right decision to sack him. Yeah.
Okay, and I guess I'm in line with what you guys are saying. I do agree with that. So there is no disagreement on sacking Yole, and then obviously the situation was what it was. All right, let's move on to Mullenstein, because like you mentioned, Mullenstein took over. He was on the staff, and he took over, and he actually was sacked on February 14th. This is going to be an interesting one. I'm curious where both of you stand on this. Let's just talk about Rennie. 3 wins, 2 draws, 9 losses, 21% winning percentage, and at the time they were last in the league. So right over to you, Mike. Talk about Rennie's reign, and then was it the right decision to sack him? Because that's what I really want to know from you.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to look back as well as why was he appointed. And I think this goes back to Khan's decision to keep Yole, which I think came from McIntosh in the end. You know, because apparently they went after Mullenstein 2 or 3 times during the summer, and part of the agreement with Yole was he would get a new assistant, you know, instead of his brother helping him out or whoever he had. And you know, eventually they got Mullenstein in, and I'm led to believe again that with the intention being that he would learn about the club throughout the whole year and then take over the following summer. But, you know, I'm not too sure about that one. But, you know, so he was brought in. They obviously saw that Yole had deficiencies and, you know, we needed improving on that side. And there you are bringing, you know, Alex's right-hand man in to help out, you know. So, you know, that was a good person to have in. Of course, yeah, I think he was only there for 2 or 3 games before Yole got the bullet. And really, you know, they immediately just said, you know, Mullenstein, you're taking over. There's no search, there's no committee or anything like that. And, you know, I mean, we've got a result against Villa. But it was a real mixed bag. His, you know, we remember Hull around Christmas
yes.
time, 6-0. We don't really want to remember it, I know. You know, and then we have a couple of cup games as well. We have a bad loss against Sunderland. I remember that one, 4-1. And then, of course, the absolutely awful draw with Sheffield United.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the loss against them at home, which was one of the most appalling performances I think any of us have ever seen. And so there wasn't really a lot of good stuff. He was playing a few youngsters. You may have seen us change style a little bit, but the results weren't changing. And then we had the Man U and the Liverpool games back to back, you know, a draw at Manchester where, you know, Dan Burn had his most famous game, you know, heading about 38 balls or whatever it was. And then Liverpool at home where we lost 3-2, if I remember rightly, to that late penalty. And that's what people hang their hats on when they support Mullenstein, is those 2 games. But quite frankly, we were battered in both of them. We got 1 point. We'd just lost to Sheffield United 1-0. And I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel under Mullenstein at all. but I could understand the sort of arguments is, you know, he's good with the youngsters, keep him to the end of the season. If we go down, at least he's going to be the right man in charge. And I think that's what most people were sort of hoping for. But the cash cow that's the Premier League, you want to stay up. And
sure,
I was told by one of the players that this player signed on loan at the end of, or signed on a contract at the end of January, and he was told that Felix was going to be in charge by the middle of the month. So, you know, they'd made that decision following the away game at Sheffield United. So you just don't know quite what was going on there, really, for those last few games. But so for me, was he the right person to take over from Yol? Well, he was the assistant manager, so probably. Was it the right decision to sack him? Yes, I think it was, because if you were looking to try and stay up, he wasn't getting the results. Despite two rearguard performances against two top teams, we needed wins, and he wasn't producing them. So, yeah, the right decision for me.
Okay, before I go to David, the one thing that I've heard from fans too, Mike, is that he didn't have a chance to work with the players that came in the January transfer window. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's true. I mean, he only had the four games. He brought in the two young lads, Tunnicliffe and Cole. And Tunnicliffe, you know, he played that sort of second right back role in those two games we talk about, and, you know, the Man U and the Liverpool games. Yeah, I can understand that. But, you know, I go back to the Sheffield United game at home. We were appalling, and, you know, Southampton at home as well. So.
Embarrassing.
So, yeah, okay. So he didn't have time to work with him, but you're running out of time. So, yeah. I mean, I understand that, but no, it was the right thing for me. And he hasn't gone on to manage, or I think he had one other job. So I don't think he was ever a manager. I don't think he even wanted to be a manager. You know, looking at his interviews going back.
Okay, very interesting tape there. So for you, it was the right decision, David. How about you?
Well, Mike's just touched on where I'm going to be going with this, that, you know, this is a chap who was an excellent number two, an excellent coach, you know, at Man United. And he was, you know, I think he tactically, you know, left to do it to that, he would have been fine, but he was kind of thrust into the limelight. He was a bit of a, I think he was almost a bit embarrassed to be there. He made a famous gaffe, didn't he, in one of his interviews. I'm sure that caused displeasure with the club. Well, I did actually like him. I liked Rene, and I think that he was hard done by because he was brought here as a coach. Then he's thrust into the limelight. Then God knows what happened with Kurbishley and Wilkins, and that's the thing I still kind of, you know, that's what gives me Rene the benefit of the doubt, in my view, that I actually think his job was made harder by having these people around.
I'm glad that you brought them up, David. Good point.
Yeah. Well, had they brought in, like, maybe a director of football or someone in a kind of a different role, you know, that would have allowed Rene just to kind of do his bit, then maybe that would have been more appropriate. But he brought in a failed manager from, you know, from Fulham previously, and someone who, you know, quite frankly, I don't think he's ever been that successful as a manager, you know, Wilkins. And, of course, Kurbishley, you know, likewise in some ways. I mean, he had a good time, I suppose, at Charlton. But, again, you know, even in the last spell, we wonder what on earth he was doing at Fulham, really, most of the time. I feel sorry for Moulinson, I really do, because, you know, again, with hindsight, you know, who would you keep out of Moulinson or McGough? You'd keep Moulinson, wouldn't you, I think? I know maybe it's the lesser of the evils, but, you know, we're not a million miles away from where we are today, because, you know, we had all this great thing about we weren't looking for a manager, we were looking for a head coach.
Yep.
And we were almost there with Moulinson. It was just having, you know, the right people around him, I think. I think he was, you know, he was thrust into a position much too early. He didn't have the right support around him. And when supposed support came in, it was the wrong men. I think that in the little period of his own, before the others came in, he actually showed promise. We actually started to look a bit brighter and stuff. Perhaps it was just, you know, new manager bounce or whatever, I don't know. But we had a spell where we started to look a bit better, I think. And then, for whatever reason, you know, it didn't really work out. But I think it was having the right people around him. you know, if the decision was already made to get rid of him and bring in McGath, then that was the wrong decision. You can say now in history that was the wrong decision. Perhaps at the time you can understand the rationale behind it, but I think, you know, basically Murnithin should have probably never been made manager, but he should have never been sacked either. There should have been someone else over and above him doing the things that he's uncomfortable with. Because I think, you know, those interviews, don't you think so? He looked uncomfortable doing those interviews, really.
He didn't want to be there.
He's a coach, yeah, and he's not like a PR man, I think. He's always been low-profile when he's at Man United, but he obviously did a good thing there. They wouldn't have kept him on for the length of time they did if he wasn't up to it, I think, you know. You get found out at a place like Man United normally. So, Murnithin, I was happy when he came in. He shouldn't have been, you know, put there on the pinnacle, but he shouldn't have been discarded as well.
Okay, so you think it was the wrong decision to let him go. Mike thinks it was the right decision. Am I correct, David?
Well, it's the circumstances which it happened. I think, you know, he's not a scapegoat for this. The damage was already done with Yol. Murnithin has a difficult situation, and I think he was undermined completely by, you know, there were other rumours, you know, that we had a player lined up to come in on loan in the January window, and someone went over their heads and brought in Mitroglou instead, which is,
I've heard that.
And I don't know how much truth is in, but, you know, that's a, just, you know, a religion. Whoever went over the head of whoever's head they went over to bring in Mitroglou, their head should be gone over with a sort of a tractor or something, really, because they obviously, you know, they need their brains rearranging. To bring in a player of that much money who wasn't fit to try and bail us out was a dreadful decision. Okay, he's done well at other places, and, you know, we probably got our money back almost, especially with a bit of amortisation or whatever Mike calls it, with depreciation and such like. But, no, I think Rene was very hard done by. I can understand why decisions were made, but the decisions that were made after Rene was appointed were the wrong ones. Firstly, bringing in Wilkins and Kirvesby, then to replace him with McGath.
Okay. So I understand that. So, guys, we're a little split on that. There is middle ground in between the two of you, but Mike and I have talked about it, and if you guys disagreed a little bit, I was going to be the deciding vote. And, Mike, let me just say this. This gives me no joy in agreeing with David, okay? I'm gonna agree with David on this. I get no joy. Let me just say I get no joy, but David makes a strong argument about Kirbishley and Wilkins, and I also thought that Mullinson didn't have enough time with the transfers. That's where I'm going. But Mike, you make a strong argument as well that we were dreadful at that period of time, and he had not shown enough. So I could see where you're going on that, but if you're putting me on the spot, oh, I agree with David. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, I'll just come back,
go,
Ross.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Mike.
No,
go
I mean,
ahead.
It's a fair one. It's a fair one. And, you know, David, what you can tell was happening with Murnithin, there was a lot of politics going on behind the scenes, wasn't there? Yeah, that's clear. And, you know, be it players being brought in by whoever, and, you know, one of the problems we've had and one of the reasons we ended up getting a director of football, whatever you want to call them, is, you know, when they sacked Yol, you know, all this staff left. So, you know, and that's what happens when you have this turnover of coaches. And Mullenstein has been there like, you know, 2 weeks, is suddenly the manager and not knowing anyone. And, you know, that can't have been easy for him. And, you know, really, you know, it was it the right decision to give him the job? Well, you know, again, in hindsight, no. And they should have known that from meetings with him, that his body language and his whole attitude wasn't that not of a manager. We all liked him. They, you know, all the fans, I think, liked him in one way or another because, you know, he was fresh and, you know, he said the right things. But in the end, results told and performances more than anything, probably. Yeah, and I suppose you're going to move on to Mr. Felix now, yeah?
Oh, yeah, we're going to move on. But before we do, guys, we are obviously running long. I just want to make sure you guys can stick around so we could do the other managers. Mike, are you all set to keep
on
going?
Fine.
I just want to make sure. What?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're fine? Okay, David, if you have to drop off and come back on, please do, okay?
Yeah, I will in a minute, but I'm glad that we've got the option to carry on a bit because I think it's an interesting discussion. It'd be a shame to cut it short.
Yeah, it would be a shame to make this a part two, so that's why I want to continue on, and it actually has been very interesting. All right, let's move on to Mad Felix, Felix McGath. And ironically, I look on my Twitter feed, Mike, before we talk about Felix McGath, and I see a picture of Felix in China. Yes, Felix is going to be managing in China, which made me chuckle. So let's start there. But let's talk about his record, 2013-2014. Obviously, Fulham get relegated. 3 wins, 3 draws, 6 losses, winning percentage 25%. The following year when we're in the championship, again, these numbers are just within the championship. I did not include any cup matches, so just so you know. 2 draws, 5 losses, obviously winning percentage of 0, and he was sacked. All right, Mike, I'm going to go to you. Let's talk about Felix McGath. I'm curious your thoughts on him.
Okay, well, first of all, I say I did know who Felix McGath was, and I had joked over the years or, you know, last the year leading up to it, you know, it'd be great to see him in England because, you know, he's a nutter and he'd get his play, get the team fit and, you know, and so, yeah, and he had a good reputation. Absolutely shocked when he was announced as manager and, you know, not surprised when his team got sacked, but shocked that he got the job. And actually, I had high hopes that he was going to, you know, work this team into shape. And I was lucky enough to be able to go to the training ground one day and watch him being trained and then also have lunch with the players and meet him and talk to him. And, you know, most of them were, you know, very happy with what was going on there, you know, with regards to training and that. In retrospect, I can now see we had too many bad apples in the squad. So, that, you know, people like Risa, Bent, Steckenberg, you know, name 3 of them and a couple of others as well I won't go into. But, you know, so was he the right appointment? I was okay when he was appointed, but really he shouldn't have been appointed. It should have been more experienced manager, someone who knew the Premier League and had probably been involved in relegations before. Because to bring in another, I don't want to use, you know, another foreign coach, if you like, and he doesn't know the league at all, and we need to get results quickly. It was a bad decision in that place to bring him in. But let's remember, it was McIntosh's decision.
That's right.
That's been agreed. He said it. He went to Khan. He said he wanted to get Felix. He'd known Felix through transactions they'd had. And he felt he was the right man. I can see why they went for him, but it was the wrong decision for me.
Okay, very good, Mike. And on top of that, let's just, I forgot to mention this, that Felix was sacked on, let me just double check the figures here, on September 18th. So he was retained. Before I go to David, here's the one thing that really concerned me at the time of bringing on Felix McGath. All the articles that I started reading in Germany, Mike, did that give you cause for concern?
No, not really, because I knew he was a nutter. But, you know, somebody who did get results. So, like I say, it sort of made sense to be a bit sort of out there and try and turn things around. But, you know, yeah, it was the right thing to do, but, you know, the fact that we got through the summer, all these players got released, it was definitely the right decision to sack him. I mean, you can't have that kind of start and not sack a player. But he gets the blame for getting rid of a lot of players, and I'm not convinced he had a lot to do with a lot of the senior players, you know, people like Sidwell and Hangland and that. You know, I mean, I've already spoken on the finance program about we failed to cut our wages by 50%, and that's why we were offloading all these players. Looking back,
okay,
Mühlenstein would have probably been the better person to have in charge of all those youngsters, and it's unfortunate that McGaff pretty much destroyed Jonrun's goalkeeping, those first few games. And then when he played Burgess as a defensive midfielder, what the hell are you doing? And Dan Burner right back at time. You know, I mean, it's just looking back, absolute disaster, the whole thing, wasn't it? And you can laugh, and we can laugh about it now, but, you know, and I was doing the Felix bingo stuff and all this type of thing, but it was just throw the names in the air, they land on the table, and that's my team I'm going to pick. And so, yeah, God knows what was going on. I'd love to sit down and talk to him and find out what he was doing. He was a very amenable bloke, you know, good to talk to, fully confident, but he was an absolute basket case when it came to picking a team, wasn't he?
Oh, Felix Bingo. I'm glad that you brought that up, Mike. And let me just say, I definitely agree with you that he should be sacked. So we're going to agree there. I'm sure David's going to agree with that. David probably thought he should have been sacked before that. David, I shouldn't speak for you, but let's talk about the Felix McGath era. Do you agree with some of Mike's sentiments there?
Oh, I think everyone should be sacked, really. I'm like, you know, I'm never put me near the red button. I would be like Donald Trump with that red button, I think. So watch out. I'd be pressing that button. I mean, Felix McGath has brought in, he was really brought in on a sort of a one-trick wonder thing, you know. He had a mandate to keep us up. Apparently, he'd done this several times before for other clubs, kept them up against the odds. So he was brought in to do a job. He didn't do the job. The easiest thing would have been to say, right, on your bike, mate, because we needed a lot of restructuring. We needed a whole different approach to being a team, you know, finding our feet in the championship and competing than what we were. And, you know, just the decision to play Dan Burn at right back on the last day of the season probably was enough to convince you that he was, in fact, tactically clueless as well as a fruitcake. But, you know, I can't knock him completely because he gave me some great comedic material. I remember a whole show I managed to get away with terrible cheese jokes in once just because of Felix McGath. You remember all those ones, all the cheesy jokes?
Yes.
And
yes.
Peter Stilton in goal and everything? We had the next best thing as well, didn't we, of course, to Peter Stilton in goal. We had another ageing goalkeeper who was, you know, moving to the spot in our old friend pyjamas there, you know. And it just really was one thing after another with him. And I thought, actually, when I saw the tweets today, it was, I don't know if you have this expression in America, Russ, but in England we have this expression, you know, to rule something out completely, you say, not for all the tea in China. So I thought it was that, you know, not for all the tea in China would I employ Felix McGath. But I don't know, perhaps, I don't know how well that translates. Do you have that expression over there?
We do, we absolutely do.
So, yeah, not for all the tea in China. So he goes to China, of course. So, you know, God help them, I think, really, because I can't see them being you know, very patient over there if he carries on being a fruitcake and with his kind of strong, you know, views and extremities. I thought he'd put a lot of noses out of joint there very quickly, and so he won't last very long. But, you know, at least he's not a Fulham. And in terms of the thing, yes, it was right to sack him, but it was also wrong to appoint him, really. In hindsight, but it was right to appoint him in the basis that we need, you know, once the decision to get rid of Mullenstein had happened, to appoint someone who had a track record in these things. He's the Red Adair, isn't he, of football, really, you know?
Yep.
I guess you know who Red Adair is, obviously, Russ. He used to come out and firefight, didn't he? Put out fires on oil rigs and stuff. And that's what that's what we needed. We needed firefighting at that point. We needed to be saved at all costs. He didn't do it. He should have gone at the end of the season. That would have been the easiest decision ever.
Okay, and that's where I wanted to go with this before we went to Kit. So I agree with you. I don't think that he should have been retained for the next following season. I know he had an 18-month contract, and that's probably why he was retained. But I agree with you. I think that they should have changed him over the summer, but they didn't. They went with him, and he went with the youth. I remember going to Jacksonville and thinking, this is a very young team, and we're going into a very tough league, and you know, I was hopeful, but here's someone that did not have any experience in the championship, and we went with him. So, Mike, I'm going to go back to you. Your thoughts on, obviously, we all agree that he should have been sacked, but should he have been sacked before the season began?
Yeah, you should. I think, you know, David's right. He was employed to keep us up. He failed. yeah, I didn't expect him to stay on in the, you know, in the summer for the new year. And looking back, we needed someone who had been going to rebuild the team, a young team, or using younger players. And that was a massive mistake. So this show's partly about, you know, what did Khan do right or wrong? You know, whether it was McIntosh who told him to keep him on or not, I don't know. But, he shouldn't have been allowed to start that season. And it set us back so much over the last 2 years. We're still suffering now because of things Felix did. So early on in that first season in the championship. So massive repercussions from that. So no, he shouldn't have continued in the summer. And of course that asked you who the alternatives were, and I remember names being banded about, you know, obviously the ex-Fulham players, and people wanted Murphy to stay, to come back and that type of thing. I'm sure we could have, got someone with championship experience who was willing to work with the youngsters. You know, I mean, they all keep appearing on the list every time we do sack a manager. So, you know, maybe we should have picked one up then. But it's a chapter of the last 38 years, which is laughable, but also probably one of the saddest as well, because we literally became a laughing stock every week waiting for him to pick that team.
Felix Bingo. Yeah, that was bad, Mike. And it probably has set us back a long time. And that's going to lead us to go to Kit. And I'm glad that we could talk about Kit in a couple stages. You already mentioned Danny Murphy, because we have to talk about Kit taking over. But what's interesting, because obviously he was the interim coach and eventually became the coach. But during this period of time, Shad Khan, in the very beginning of Kit taking over, had his committee to find the new Fulham head coach / manager, whichever you want to call it. Eventually, Kit Simons won the job. But there was a committee put together. So when we talk about this, we have to talk about his committee that he put together to find the right man, and it ended up being Kit. And I feel that part of that reason was because he was getting the results at the time. And let's talk about his first season. It started off okay. You had the new manager, new head coach bounce. But overall, 2014-2015 under Kit, Fulham, 14 victories, 11 draws, 16 losses. What's interesting, it's a winning percentage of 34%. Okay, so keep that in mind. Winning percentage, Kit's first season in charge of Fulham, 34%. So, Mike, before we talk about the alternatives and was it the right decision to sack him when he does, we'll get to that in a little bit, because we'll talk about the following season. Let's just concentrate. Let's do this in stages. Let's just talk about Kit's first season in charge.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we'll do it this way, but I think Kit's managerial time at Fulham can be split into three parts. Up to Christmas, post Christmas, and then to the end of the season, and then the start of, the season just gone, because they're three distinct times where his performances, have varied. So he got the job. I was a big advocate of him taking over, getting the job, partly because he knew all the youngsters who were around the first team squad. So I had no problem with him being the caretaker. And, the committee's announced, fine. But in the end, he got results. And I would have found it very hard if I was Khan to then turn around to him and say, no, we're going to go with someone else after the results he got in that time scale. So up to Christmas, he's got the job full time, and up to Christmas, everything seemed to be going okay. But it's almost from Boxing Day onwards.
It went down.
Just dreadful. Just absolutely awful. And it's almost like he started discarding some of the players who had done the good work for him. And I'm going to say Jack again, because Jack had a tough time at right back. But then he was finding his feet. He was on to about his 10th or 11th game in a row. And then he brings in Richards, so he dumps him, and a couple of the other youngsters as well. Suddenly, here's the manager we all thought is going to play these players, and they're not getting a kick all of a sudden. And that's when the results started going wrong. And you saw in the second half of that year, and I remember doing shows and you know, stuff on Twitter and a couple of the forums, you know, is that he's just not the right man coming to the end of the season. That was, you know, we'd seen enough. Tactically, wasn't good enough. And, you know, defensively, we were still a mess at times. And, you know, I was very disappointed. But at the end of the season, I would have been quite happy to see a change made. Was it a manager bounce? It was the ultimate manager bounce when he took over from McGaffer. But then I think I could have done it and Dave could have done it, looking back. You know, just a fresh voice and someone with a bit of common sense. But, you know, he did some good work in that first part of his managerial stuff. But it's a second and the third part. We'll do it now because I know time, Russ, okay? So
sure.
We started the season just gone and we're mid-table-ish. But again, we're seeing the same things, the same lack of substitutions. All the things he said during the summer about, I've learned from my mistakes, we will improve in these areas. We didn't improve in these areas.
Not at all.
The football at times was poor, slow, ponderous, and you know, we just weren't improving. Was it the right decision to sack him at that time? Probably. In hindsight, no, because we were mid-table and only a few points off playoffs, so maybe he should have got a bit longer. But we'd had two bad results in a row, and we were up and down result-wise. There was no consistency. If it stayed, we would have probably bobbed along about 14th, 12th to 14th, somewhere around there. But for me, the main thing was there was no improvement defensively. And as a centre-back, as somebody knew all these youngsters, he let himself down for me in those two areas. Lack of pushing the youngsters and his defensive coaching abilities.
Okay. And, Mike, I forgot to mention, last season, Kitten Charge, 5 wins, 5 draws, 6 losses, 31% winning percentage. That was his record. So we're going to take this in stages, and then I'll go to Davey. I'm glad that you broke it up into three parts because I think that's a great way to do it. First part, good. Second part, not so good. And third part, we kind of knew what we had. And for me, I wanted the change. So twofold. Was the right decision to retain him over the summer, and then was it the right decision to sack him on November 8th?
It wasn't the right decision to keep him come the end of last season because he'd shown in the second half of the season that he wasn't improving, and he was given three decent players, you know, from the loan market as well. You just saw things in him that were showing that he wasn't learning. And then was it the right decision to sack him? I think he was unlucky to be sacked when he was, given our position. But it would have happened sooner or later.
Right. And, Mike, this is something that you and I talked about. I remember meeting you in New York, and this is before that. This is a month before. And you kept looking at the table. You kept on looking at the numbers, Mike. I remember us having this discussion. You're saying, if we want to get promoted, we need to be at a certain point. And he did not meet their numbers. He did not meet their numbers. That's why he was ultimately sacked. So I know what you're saying, that a part of this is, well, we probably would have been 12th to 14th. But if we're looking for the ambition for the club, Mike, I think it was right to sack him.
It's clear that the club expected us to be top 8, top 6, and we were short of that target. And as you know, I'm a stats man, and we need to be at certain positions within the season to challenge. The fact remains, after 12, 13 games, if you're not in the top 6, then there's a good chance you're not going to be in the top 6 come the end of the season. You know, 5 of the teams in the top 6 after 13 games this year, we're in the top 6 at the end of the season. So, you know, that's your kind of target you need to be at. So,
sure.
Yeah, you know, I can understand why they sacked him. I'll just finish here, Russ, because I know
okay.
about time and get David on. Should the club have had someone ready? to come in, and that is we've touched on this. Is it the right way or the wrong way to do things? You've got an employee. Do you go behind their back looking to replace him? It's a difficult question. Lots of clubs do it. We didn't, and we agreed on one of the shows recently. Those 7 weeks cost us, and you know, that was the biggest mistake, really.
It's a tough one, Mike, because you know, this goes back to the style of film. Do you do what you just say? And I've thought about this a great deal. I look at Liverpool. Liverpool were planning to bring Klopp in. They did their due diligence. Was it the right thing to do? Was it the right thing to do business wise? Yes. Was it morally the right thing to do? Probably not. And that's the question you have to ask yourself. And those 7 weeks killed our season. Let's just be honest. It killed our season. They obviously were not prepared. They did not have someone ready to go, and that turned out to be to really kill off the season. But it's interesting to really talk about that. That's why I'm glad that we're having this discussion, even to go back to that again, because that's the point. They did not have anyone ready to go, and that turned out to be the difference. David, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on everything we've talked about. Mike did a really good job of breaking up into three parts. So touch on that, and also touch on my 2 points. You know, should he have been retained should he have been retained after the first season over that summer? And then was it right to sack him at that time? David? Did we lose David again?
Sorry, that was my fault there. I made a Goldman, I'm sorry. I was enjoying a delicious cornetto with a chocolate fake, and I was making too much noise, so I put myself on mute for a second. Sorry about that.
Good job, David.
Sorry, I was listening. I promise I was listening. But,
David. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I know. I'm sorry. That was a Goldman. I'm sorry. So Mike did an excellent job there. He, you know, summed up pretty much how it was in my view as well. The thing with Kit, as you know, myself and Emilio were never struck on him, and we didn't really ever want him to get the job. But there was this kind of weight of opinion because he was a Fulham guy, he knew the youngsters, and because as a caretaker, of course, we had that bounce. I think I said at the time, I mean, you know, Mike said as well, I think anyone really would have got a bounce out of those players after McGath. It was such an impressive regime from what, you know, what we led to believe. I think the trouble for me with Kit was that, you know, he was very one-dimensional. You know, he wasn't proactive at all. He wasn't even very reactive, really. He didn't react as well as other managers to change things around. He got tactically out-thought for me. You know, he had very much in this season, he based everything around his diamond, if you remember. That was his real favourite position, formation, the diamond. And it started off well because we had the new manager bounce. And, of course, playing the diamond, you know, it's a narrow formation, but it gives you a lot of strength in the middle of the park. And for a while it worked. But I think that other teams started looking at us and realising that we had no width and our fullbacks had no pace, effectively, because we had our, you know, our friend Jazz Richards come in as well, especially, you know, after, at that point. And so other teams could get at us. They could push forward, you know, attack our fullbacks because we didn't have anyone wide, you know, giving them cover. And the fullbacks, our fullbacks weren't really good getting forward. You know, if you play a narrow diamond system, you have got to have good fullbacks. You know, and yeah, I think England kind of showed this the other match they played, where we played quite a narrow system, but we had, like, for example, Kyle Walker at that right back. And now you might think he's a good player or not. Maybe Nathan Clyne Nathaniel Clyne is a better defender. I don't know, but Kyle Walker is quick. He gets forward quickly. And if you're going to play a narrow system, you need your fullbacks to be quick. And we didn't have that. And I think that's where we got found out. We got a lot of pressure down the wings, people getting taking our fullbacks on, putting crosses in. And in the same vein, our fullbacks weren't getting forward and giving us width. And very soon, teams worked out how to play. And that's what I think went wrong for Kit, that he based his, you know, selection too much on... He put all his money on one formation. He didn't have a plan B, not really. He didn't really have a plan B. So we got an early manager bounce, but once other teams had worked out how to play us, then the honeymoon was over. And after that, it was a struggle. And it really, for me, was, you know, the most clear decision was that he wouldn't be retained at the end of that season. I think that was the obvious decision. It's a shame because, as I say, you know, he came in, he stepped up from where he was and where he'd done a great job in the background with the juniors and everything. But, you know, it was clear that he just didn't have whatever it takes to outwit other managers. You know, you've got to get some right wily old managers in this division or in any divisions, you know. It's a real thinking thing. You need a thinker, and this is why, obviously, ultimately we've gone with Slavisa, that he's seen as being a deep thinker, a tactician. I mean, Kit, I think he was very shallow, unfortunately. I hate to say that, you know, nothing against the guy personally, of course. You know, I'm sure he's a lovely chap, but very shallow, and I think he's, you know, his body language showed that, his tactics showed that, his substitutions showed that. So for me, I can understand why he was given the job, but, you know, again, you have to question perhaps the whole setup that, you know, Shahid Khan has asked sort of a random set of people to come in and, you know, find a new manager. And they couldn't actually find a new manager apart from someone from within the club. They didn't identify anyone from anywhere. And you'd think with having, you know, Danny Murphy and Niall Quinn and the head of Nike from the Netherlands or whoever he was and someone else, you know, all these people involved, you'd think they'd have a lot of contacts and a lot of nous. And in the end, we end up with promoting someone from within the club who wasn't maybe ready for it or up to it. So you've got to question the whole decision in appointing him. But you can understand why he was appointed, of course. He was given the caretaker's position. You know, if anyone is asked to do a job for a few weeks and they excel and things go well, then it's a very hard decision not to give them the job. But it was the wrong decision to appoint him, and it was the wrong decision most certainly to keep him on in the summer. But again, this is where, you know, Khan has been maybe badly advised, or he's put his faith in people. Mike Rigger's come in, and Mike Rigger's literally said, you know, it was a close decision, but we've decided to keep Kit on. That was what, you know, in that famous video they did. It basically, he almost said that in words, that, you know, we only just about kept him on. It was there. And you know, as we talked about, he obviously had a target where we needed to be at a certain point, and we hadn't met that target, and therefore Kit was released. But again,
was that,
like
was
the
that
year
the right
before,
decision,
it was
David?
Another season wasted.
I'm sorry, David. Was it the right decision to... Obviously, you've already said that it was a mistake to keep him on over the summer, but was it the right decision at the time to sack him?
Well, it was the wrong decision to appoint him. It was the wrong decision to keep him on in the summer, but I guess it was the right decision to get rid of him because he wasn't good enough. And I know we have this massive situation with, you know, not having a replacement, but if someone isn't good enough to a job... Do you keep them on because there's no one else, or do you get rid of them because they're not good enough? That's the thing.
Okay.
And I know the situation hasn't improved. You know, that long gap didn't help. And then, you know, Slavisa hasn't exactly been pulling up flowers or whatever the expression is, you know, so far. He hasn't been setting the world alight. But we think that he has got the capability, at least, with the right players and time to start rebuilding things because he is... You know, he has a reputation for being a tactician, but for Kit, he was retained too long, and I think the decision to sack him was right because it was a decision that should have been taken earlier anyway.
Right, and I definitely agree with that. I agree with both your points. Guys, we only have a little under 6 minutes left, so Mike, I want to go back to you real quickly because before he was, well, I shouldn't say before, it was actually right after he was sacked, there were alternatives. Let's talk about the alternatives quickly. One of them was Slavisa, but he was in Israel, and he had Champions League duty. That's why he probably was not hired at the time. But you had other alternatives. You and I talked about Paul Lambert. There was also Nigel Pearson, and there was Steve Clark. So let's talk about the alternatives quickly. Your thoughts on those that actually eventually got us to Slavisa.
Okay, well, I know Slavisa was interviewed in the first week, and we obviously know what happened with Clark. My understanding is Pearson was nowhere even near the job, and I personally, I'm glad he wasn't.
I forgot Gary Rowett, by the way. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and Rowett. I mean, I spoke to Rigg, and he said that he was let down twice in those 7 weeks. You know, literally the pen's poised above the signature line. But, you know, one of them obviously was Clark. Who the other one was, I don't know. but it was all about money in the end. They all wanted more than they'd agreed. And, you know, I think we've got the right man. Results don't necessarily say that, but he's got a team promoted before. I like some of the stuff he's tried. And we've already seen, we spoke about it at the beginning of the program, you know, changes are happening already, and that's what we wanted. And it is a clear the decks situation. But it took too long to appoint him. We can understand why he wanted to stay at his team. But really, the whole point of this show was, has Khan made decisions rightly or wrongly?
Right.
But, of course, his decisions now have been passed over to Rig. So, you know, that's the major decision he's made in all this time, is a committee and now giving it to Rig. So he's given the experts, if you like, the job to pick these managers and sack them. And has he found the right one finally? Well, let's hope so.
Absolutely, Mike. And I'll just finish off before I go to David, just to mention Slavisa's record with Fulham last year, 6 wins, 6 draws. 10 losses, winning percentage of 27%. And as I mentioned on a prior show, that's the same start for Chris Hughton at Brighton. And we've seen what happened with Brighton. And David doesn't like that I mentioned that, but you never know. So I'm just going to mention that comparison. David, quickly, we only have a little over 3 minutes left. Thoughts on the possible alternatives during this 7-week period?
Well, you know, who was a serious alternative? We don't know. It's Clark. Yeah, maybe. Didn't set the world alight for us. Rowett, up and coming, but not a lot of track record. I mean, Slavisa, I think on paper his credentials are better than the others. It's just the fact that we had no interim real kind of plan in place, and so we just carried on treading water just about. And, you know, if anything, we were taking water in and sinking further.
Yep.
In that period. And that was, If they identified that Slavisa was a serious target from the start, then obviously either try and get him earlier, or don't sack Kit then, or bring in someone that you know can do a stopgap gap job till Slavisa was available. Either way, the whole thing was a mess. And again, you know, we talk about being an embarrassment. You know, when McGath was there, I mean, really, we were a bit of an embarrassment in that period as well, because, you know, we didn't know who was taking the training, who was picking the team. It kept changing on a weekly basis, really. So it didn't help our season. Okay, I think the season was probably dead anyway at that point.
Okay.
We would have needed to do very, very well. But 2 seasons wasted by having the wrong man in charge at the start of the season, I would say. And that's it. And you know, from now on, it's just a matter of who we bring in and how we start. And that would be very interesting to see. If we can start very well, then perhaps, you know, your analogy with Brighton, you know, may be good, but I think it's going to be tough still.
Okay, very good. And, guys, we only have a little over a minute left, and Mike's idea was really to bring in this about the managers and under Khan and talk about it and see if we could figure out exactly what's happened. And, Mike, here's my final thought on this. There have been a lot of mistakes made. If Khan, Rig, and everyone underneath them have learned from their mistakes, and Slavisa is the right guy, I think in the end we'll be happy. How about that?
Well, I think Dave hit the nail on the head actually when he said we've started the last 2 seasons with the wrong man in charge. So let's hope that Jokanović, I think we're mainly agreed, is the right man to start the season. So
right.
That's a bonus, isn't it, going forward?
Okay, very good. Guys, great show. I've enjoyed it very much, but it is time to go. For Mike Gregg and David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. You were fantastic.
Cheers, thanks.
Cheers, so was I.
Boys and girls.